This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
If I bend my youth, would it come to me? Oh, love, won't you bat my eye? I miss the sweet garden man, baffle a skeleton dry. All they wanted was a villain, and all they had was me.
Good morning, and welcome to Positively Revolting on KBOO Portland. Positively Revolting is a weekly talk show that speaks out about oppressive and antiquated ideas, while highlighting those people and movements that are trying to make a positive difference. I'm Sarah Sneath, filling in for your regular hosts, Ani and Lynn, and I have with me today Sam and River of Community Supported Everything, a thought experiment based on interdependence and a guild hall in Northeast Alberta that is practicing this community experiment. I'd like to invite you to like Positive Revolting on Facebook. You can also like Community Supported Everything on Facebook while you're at it. We're also on Twitter, where our handle is @PositiveRevolt.
I go by the name River, and this is the levels check for me.
I'm Sam, and this is what my voice sounds like.
How about you begin by telling me a little about what Community Supported Everything is?
So Community Supported Everything started about, the first meeting I think was in April of last year. It's only been about a year. Mm-hmm. And we were a group of people who started to get together at coffee shops and bars, and we started asking each other what we were really passionate about, what we're excited about, what we really like to do, what are the things we've always wanted to do but never got a chance. And we started making lists of people's passions, skills, offers, and requests. Mm-hmm. We noticed that, like, even with a really small group of people, like six people who already knew each other
Three people.
Yeah. It was like, people were like, oh, you want that? I've got one of those. Or my friend does this. Or my brother can help you with that. Or, like, you like to brew beer? I like to brew beer. Mm. And so just, like, all of these overlaps in interests that had just never come up in normal sort of civil chatter.
And these are people that have known each other sometimes their whole lives who are going, wait, you've always wanted to play the banjo? Why haven't we talked about this? And coming to this, like, deep understanding of someone else's passion, which we really don't ever make space to talk about in everyday life.
And so we were doing that just all through the summer. Started growing. We started meeting in Colonel Summers Park. And then once it started getting rainy out, we started looking for spaces. And we really wanted some place where we could do it indoors, because doing it in coffee shops is really loud. And so through one of our connections that we had met, we found this place right on Alberta, and they offered us to come in, and I sell t-shirts for a living, and a bunch of us are artists, so they were going to do an art show, and they're like, well, why don't you come and do the art show, and you can try out this thing that you're doing here. And we started testing out what it was like to have a community space where people could come in and tell us what they were really excited about, and it really started to take off, and just having this space just sort of, like, gave people a place where they knew they could come and plug in with that energy.
They had really been waiting for it. It turned out simply facilitating a space for people to meet up really brought out, like, okay, so I've been wanting to do this, and I've been wanting to do that, and I'm a circuit builder, and I just need a space to do this. I want to talk to people like that. And our clout that we had been building for about 9 months then was just, like, accelerated into a workshop where we could actually say, okay, yeah, you have permission to do this, where before it was just this, like, loose agreement, acknowledgement of, oh, you want to build a space station, that's neat. It became this, well, let's host a time to talk about
there
building
are
space stations.
There are six other people who want to learn how to build community-supported space stations.
Let's do that here. And that was a real conversation for a while. And not that I got off the ground. but, you know, it was really, it really met our needs for inspiration to actually be facilitating conversations about space stations and people actually knowing and having tangible action items around that.
Yeah.
So this all started with the idea of a CSA. So CSA stands for Community Supported Agriculture. And this is an intentional relationship between a farmer and a community who's gathered resources, usually financial resources, Federal Reserve notes, to give to the farmer to directly support him or her and get a product that is very, very intentional. And I was asking Sam like a year ago, like, Sam, why can't we do this with anything? And we couldn't figure out a reason not to. We started then talking about our passions. We spent about a month talking about, well, how would we ask people about, like, creating these intentional relationships? And it came down to asking three questions at the time. And the original three questions, do you remember them?
I remember, like, what would you do if you could do anything?
Original three questions were, what are your skills, what are your resources, and what are your needs? And later, once you got into the park, we changed it into four things. It was, what are your passions? What are your skills? What are your offers to the community? And what are your requests from the community to better thrive? And it turns out when you give people space to explicate exactly what they love, what they can do, what they need to do it, and what they can offer, they tell you. They love to tell you. They'll become a volunteer for you, an arbitrary community member, when you tell them, consensually. Sometimes it doesn't work out, of course. And they become these autonomous volunteers. And if you know a little bit about the root of the word volunteer, like, it's a really, really powerful thing. A volunteer is someone who's passionately driven to get something done because they believe in it.
So you talked a little bit about CSAs and the farmer hands over, you know, biweekly or something like that, basket of vegetables. Mm-hmm. But this is something that's maybe intangible. It's like a basket of a skill set but in some ways, some of these things that you're lending each other are maybe paint supplies or something like this also. I'm just trying to visualize these concepts.
When we started off with this idea, we were like, what if we could do that with anything? And it ended up being harder than we thought. You know, it was like, agriculture is really simple. Food, okay, like, what if we could do that? What if everyone could just get their needs met from the community? But what we really hit on that really started to work was just asking people what they're passionate about. And that's about where we... So that was the first thing that really took off, because giving people space to just say, this is who I am, in this sort of setting of being like, yeah, that's a great idea. That's fine. It is fine that you're passionate about that. That's great. We're glad that that makes you happy. What would you need to do it better? And so we really, really try as a group to not offer advice that's unasked for and not offer judgment. Just say, what do you want to do? We have a vested interest in you as a community member thriving. What do you need to do that more powerfully? And now we're getting to this point where we have a lot of people who we can remember. We have a list of people who are interested in different things, and we can start making connections. And there are tangible things that are coming out of it that are community resources that people really want to create together. Things like, you know, growing food. If someone has a garden and someone really wants a garden but they don't have space, you put them together and both of them are getting their needs met. Or people are self-organizing into a cooperative beer co-op that follows all of the OLCC standards for homebrewing and creates a surplus of money for the community while providing, like, making beer cheaper than you could make it anywhere else. So these really tangible sort of micro business models or cooperative models are now emerging that are more in line with the CSA idea that we started with. But the really important thing is just creating a space where people, I think, feel really welcome to bring whatever it is they have to offer.
It's really, really fun. We've met hundreds of people through the CSE, and it's so mischievous. I feel like Lord Hermes of the Pantheon, you know, who just gets to make connections and exchange things. I get to, like, say, well, what happens if I get this person in the room with this person? It's like, they don't have any of the same passions and skills, and there's something there that I see. I'm I'm going to get them in the same room and see what happens. And sure enough, like, they're like, wait, what? You're a mason, and I'm a painter. You build walls, and I can make murals out of those walls? If we just, like, team up, you know, we can mural everything and, like, build beautiful stuff. And the examples go on, and it's really fun. It's really playful to get involved with community.
You've been listening to Positively Revolting on KBOO Portland. I'm Sarah Sneath, filling in for your regular hosts, Ani and Lynn. Today I'm speaking with Salmon River of Community Supported Everything, a community of people practicing interdependence. Like Positively Revolting on Facebook or follow it on Twitter at Positive Revolt.
And so the I guess this brings us to this concept of guilds that we've been playing around with, which is the name that we are using for these models, whatever they are guilds. Guild, I love as a word because it's a word that people know what it is. It's a, you know, collective of artisans generally, historically, but it's not used very often anymore. And so it doesn't have the same cultural baggage that a word like cooperative or intentional community or CSA has. And people can hear those things and be like, oh, I understand what that is, because it does function a little bit differently. But the idea that we're working on with guilds is sort of in permaculture, there are permaculture guilds, and it's like groups of plants that you plant together that all thrive better collectively than they could individually. And the classic example is the Three Sisters Guild, which is corn, squash, and beans. And the corn grows really tall and really fast and provides a trellis for the beans. And then the beans have a symbiotic relationship with bacteria at their roots that fix nitrogen out of the air that provide fertilizer for the corn and the squash. And the squash grows out along and like vines out along the base and has broad leaves, so it blocks out all the weeds. So just by the corn doing what corn naturally does, which is grow tall, it helps the peas do what they do best, which is fix nitrogen and trellis. So I really like that metaphor of if you put the right group of people together, you can have people who, just by doing the thing that they can't not do and like expressing their true nature, they help everyone around them thrive. And so that's the concept of a guild, and that's what we're trying to build, whatever that looks like. And it doesn't have to be economic. The idea is people coming together to create a surplus greater than they could alone. And sometimes that surplus is just amazing because two people have amazing skills and resources, but they just don't have that net to that support to be like, yes, that's a great idea. Let's do that together. And then once people are like, they snap into like, I can do that. And it's really cool.
A lot of what you're talking about, I feel like there's probably a lot of internet sites that try to attempt to do the same thing, like Meetup.
Yeah.
And that try to inspire networking of people with similar passions. What do you think that Community Supported Everything does differently?
Two things. One, we thrive within the gift economy. Two, we meet in public. There's something about being able to look someone in the eyes and trust them and be like, yeah, I'm totally down with what you're doing. Like, you just feel good. And maybe even our passions and skills don't match up at all, but there's something about how you act that makes me want to work with you, and we're going to do powerful things because I like you. You don't get that on the internet. And it just, it makes me a little sad, you know, that the place that we have reserved for our commons in the United States and a lot of the world, I'm guessing, is digital, where we don't get that deep personal connection and trust. And two is the gift economy. We give everything away for free, which Meetup has chosen not to do. They used to be free, and now they want to charge people for using their services, charge the hosts of their workshops and the like, or their meetups, I guess they call them, to host meetups. And for me, that's not the thing. You know, if you want to get people to be stronger together, playing Tollkeeper is really, really exclusive to certain people. And it really doesn't model the mutualism that I'm looking for, the like horizontal agreement. It's sort of a tax and a tariff saying, well, you know, if you want to be powerful together, you have to pay me. Hmm. Oh, okay. Excuse me. I thought we could just be powerful together and like get stuff done that we know needs to get done. there's something about like the commons there in the public domain.
There are these websites that link people together, and they've done a great job. And the most successful ones are the ones that bring people together through the internet to coordinate them making action in real life. I mean, if you look at Occupy or Idle No More, they're perfect examples. We live in a world where one group of people can hit on a tactic and say, this is what we're doing over here. And if that tactic resonates, it can spread by like autonomous action across the entire world within weeks.
Let's bring it out of politics. Another one that I know inspired both of us is Couchsurfing.
Mm-hmm.
Couchsurfing is this idea of hospitality worldwide where, you know, we're going to take the commercialism out of it and invite people to actually come together and talk about the places they're visiting and show them the culture of visiting. You know, someone comes to Portland and they're just a tourist. They pick up a tour guide. They're going to have a prerogative that is possibly, you know, driven by financial conversion rather than, well, what's actually interesting to see. And you're going to be told to visit Pow's Books and Voodoo Donuts, which is great. I like both those places, don't get me wrong. And there's something more to Portland than just Pow's Books and Voodoo Donuts. You know, there's something that's not downtown. There's something sacred about going down to Alberta Street and saying, hey, you know, I know of this really cool grassy alley, and I think it's really special to me. And connecting to other people through that and going to these tangible meetups and sharing culture and like having potlucks and even growing gardens together and all these silly little things like Midnight Mystery Ride. People just meet up and ride bikes together. No tour book's going to tell you about the Midnight Mystery Ride or the Village Building Convergence. They couldn't. You know, you've got something physical. Like there's something about the meet space that can be catalyzed by this meta space. You know, internet is a beautiful thing, and I love being a physical being. Being a physical being, yeah, that works, I guess. You know, like, let's just go out and ride bikes is pretty important, so.
You're listening to Positively Revolting on KBOO Portland. I'm Sarah Sneath, filling in for your regular hosts, Ani and Lynn. I'm here today with Sam and River of Community Supported Everything, a community of people practicing interdependence. Like Positively Revolting on Facebook. You can like Community Supported Everything on Facebook while you're at it.
In intentional communities and stuff, some of the problem with working with other people so closely seems to be this not getting along thing. Mm. Are there rules set in place for like non-judgment or?
We mostly have at least a vague basis in nonviolent communication, which has proven to be invaluable in just, you know, being able to communicate our feelings and have really, really deep discussions. Another thing that I think is really important is we focus on building groups of people who work well together, and we
voluntarily,
yeah. We build guilds and we make connections that empower other people to take autonomous action.
We don't even build them. We just invite people to be heard, and they can choose to build them.
So yeah, it's like, so one of the things we found that's really worked is giving people that autonomy where it's like, you're not on food team, CSE food team. You are on the group of people who want to do this and who want to bake cupcakes and give them out for free on the max. And if that team of people who enjoy doing that want to work well with another group of people who are really passionate about food, they can work together as it meets their needs. And if they're totally opposed or have, you know, ideological differences, they don't have to work together. So creating space for people to have space to explore what they think is the right thing to do in their own ways, I think is really important, creating the option of distance. And then when you are in close proximity with a lot of people, having the tools and the intention for working through problems and mediating, which is difficult for all humans. I really think that the one of the huge shifts and paradigm shifts in human consciousness is just how we relate to each other and how we communicate with each other and own what's alive in us and how to work well together.
It's cultural.
Yeah.
Like, one of the challenges is getting everyone to like move past this instantaneous like, yeah, and I disagree, and get on to, oh, I see. And let me tell you about my honesty. There's something really simple about, you know, just acknowledging someone and then getting on to your thing that helps them not be so offended when you say what you're going to do. Oh, yeah, well, you know, you want to bake cupcakes, but what about gluten-free people? Like, it's not my job to do gluten-free. I instantly can get into this, like, argument. If you promote a culture of yes and rather than, you know, this defensiveness, I think it's really helpful. So
pretty much every time we've done that, someone has showed up with vegan and gluten-free cupcakes. Like, oh, I'll do that.
Although there's some contention over what ingredients are included in those. And it's just sometimes slow to work with different people who aren't used to a culture of like, yeah, we're doing radical positivity. Yeah, like, it's really easy to get into negativity. Once you start talking about negativity, everyone's got their opinion. Everyone wants to put in their two cents about why something's different and why something's wrong. And just getting to, like, the, like, and part of it. Mm-hmm. Like, and how do we make this? What are tangible next steps is really helpful.
And like, leaving space for people to add their thing. Like, well, I disagree, and I think we should do that. And instead of having people butt heads, be like, you know, empower people to be like, you do this and you do that. And if we have similar goals, we can see how these two different strategies actually meet, like, get closer to meeting our goals as, you know, as we're all experimenting together. Because I think there's this process of micro creative evolution where we really, it's very, very, very difficult to predict what will work and what won't. And it's very, sometimes there are very, very obvious things or very, very non-obvious things that are really, really necessary for something to succeed. So the more strategies that we try, the more likely we're going to hit on something that works. So empowering people if they disagree to be, you know, a lot of times when people disagree, they're like, I disagree because if we do that, then this will happen, and then that will happen, and then this will happen. And it ends up being, and someone's like, well, actually, I think if we do it this way, then this will happen. And mm-hmm. It ends up being a lot of speculation. And so giving space to allow for many different attempts.
We're going to go to a short music break. We'll be back with more Positively Revolting.
All they wanted was a villain, and all they had was me. All they wanted was a villain, so then they just took me.
And the Get Down, Stay Down with We the Common. Again, you're listening to Positive Revolting. I'm your host, Sarah Sneath, and I have with me today Sam and River, who are talking about community-supported everything, a thought experiment based on interdependence and a guild hall in Northeast Alberta that is practicing this community experiment.
We tried to make them separate for a very specific reason, which is that it's the same idea that we've been talking about. We want the idea of community supported everything, which I think are people doing all over the place. No one needs to call it community supported everything. It's what we call it. It's a sort of intention of coming together to meet our needs collaboratively, which people have been doing for millennia.
We just have a certain structure.
We have a certain
structure. Four questions.
Yeah, and that'll probably change as well. Community supported everything is what we call any group of people who come together with the intention of empowering themselves as a community.
It's not incorporated.
Exactly.
It doesn't have a legal entity to it. It's not got a rule set.
And it belongs to anyone who wants to use it for whatever reason, as long as people are coming together with the intention of, you know, gift economy and meeting their needs collaboratively.
And
thank you. And the Guild Hall is a space where a couple of stewards are exploring that idea. And the reason we make that distinction is because at the beginning we felt a lot of pressure. Because, like we said, there was a lot of people who wanted us to be all of these things. And we wanted to be all of these things. But at the end of the day, we're just a couple of neighbors who have never done anything like this before, who are really just sort of like juggling things and seeing what works and what doesn't. And what we've been doing has been changing a lot. It's been changing really rapidly. And so we really want to have that ability to iterate and that ability to be judged by what we're doing and what we make happen. And if people, you know, disagree or have ideas about what they think we should be doing,
we can
empower them to go start a new project while maintaining our autonomy to do what we think is best.
Yeah. So the Guild Hall is our space, our project of community support, everything for us to empower people. Yes, we can gift you some space. Yes, we can schedule on our calendar and let you use our mm-hmm. workshop to teach a class on soap making mm-hmm. or have a conversation or have a Spanish potluck hour or learn screen printing or circuit hacking or it goes on for a while.
So the Guild Hall is located in Northeast, right?
Yeah, it's on 1626 Alberta.
And is it open certain hours?
Ish.
We've been trying really hard to keep it open from 12 to 4 p.m.
Every single day.
Every single day, except Sunday. If the person who is hosting that day happens to want to stay a little bit later, they might keep it open later with the understanding that they could kick people out and close it at any time. Because it does end up attracting a lot of people, and people like to hang out there, and that's fine. And we want to attract a lot of people, but we also want to have those intentional agreements where people sort of know the agreements and why we're doing things the way we're doing. So, and that goes back to some of the problems, is just making sure that people know. You know, there have been times where people come in and they're like, community supported everything does this. And we say, we're just people. We're just doing this and we're doing our best. And people go, oh, right. You're not a company. You're not a nonprofit. You don't have a board of directors. You're just doing your thing. I get it. And I really
and then
like.
Sometimes people come into the Guild Hall and I'm going to do this with the Guild Hall. Well, actually, you didn't get our consent. And, you know, this is a space that is doing this project of community support, everything. Yes, you have autonomy to do that, and you cannot take out our stairs.
Yeah. And so the reason I bring this up is, I mean, I feel like this is probably a little bit more information than a lot of organizations give, but I think this vulnerability is really important in this clarity, because I actually feel really strongly that I need to be able to do this work, the ability to say, no, you can't do that here, even though it's a community space. And very often in sort of radical communities, there's this idea like everything should be free and everything should belong to everyone.
Consent.
You really need to have this sort of autonomy. And on the other side of that, if we are running this Guild Hall, then I can be held accountable for the way that I choose to run it, and River can be held accountable for the way he chooses to run it. And if people eventually, like, if they ever decide that what we're doing is not meeting their needs, then they can let us know, or they can let us know what they need to do something that does meet their needs. And I really think, I guess I feel strongly about this because it's really hard for a few people to be everything that everyone wants them to be. And that's something that's really weighed on me as we've been doing this.
Sadness about not being able to meet everyone's
and when,
needs.
And when people are like, I wish you were doing this, and you're not doing it the way that I would do it, and I have to have this clarity where I can be like, I'm doing the best that I can, and this is really what I believe is right, and I respect that you disagree, but I'm not going to change what we're doing with this community space. You know, but please tell me, please do this thing, you know. And I think that's, if there's one thing that I've learned from doing this work, it's that sounds, people's feelings can get hurt mm-hmm. when you say, no, you can't do that in this community space.
And my feelings are probably going to hurt about it too, and we can both hurt, and it can also be okay.
But I think that's part of the work, is to be able to set boundaries so that you can continue doing the work that you're doing powerfully. And if that ends up being good work, people will help. And if it ends up not, people don't see the value in it, they'll stop helping. And that's what I would like to be judged against.
Yeah. Well, I really appreciate your honesty here. And it definitely sounds like there are difficulties in everything.
There are.
And there are difficulties in everything we do, but sometimes we're not honest with ourselves about what those difficulties are. But can you describe the actual space a little bit better and what, other than a roof, what the space has to offer?
Sure. I would love to. So imagine you're walking down Alberta Street in the middle of the Arts District, just a block away from two co-ops. You've got the Alberta Street Grocery Co-op, you know, a block away to our west. And then two doors down, you've got the Community Cycling Center, which is a lovely little organization, literally a stone's throw away. And you're walking between these two buildings, and you see a nice little blue house with a cozy sunlit lawn on the south side of the block, flying the green, white, and blue with the Doug fir, the Cascadian flag outside. And you've got this these flower beds bracketing the stairway with strawberries and succulents planted in them, and a couple brassicas known as broccoli trying to grow. It's a little shady where they're at, and I hope they do their best. And the stairway going up to a doorway with an ancient hobo symbol inviting you to come and gather and go out and share. And you walk through the door, and there's these beautiful, beautiful old fir, like old growth fir floors. And in front of you, there's a sign inviting you to have a cup of tea and visit your intentions and ask yourself why you're here and what you want to do and what you want to bring and what you want to get. And to your right is our workshop, our classroom, our meeting room with a 3 foot by 13 foot whiteboard just scrawled with all sorts of things. Right now, I think it has a dinosaur playing the ukulele. It's got an explanation of the tarot. Several permaculture designs, a way to tear up the front yard and make it a common space.
And there's a complete list of someone's passions and skills. And,
uh-huh.
and that we leave
what
the passions.
What was the quote you wrote?
What?
There was a quote you wrote.
Justice is what love looks like in public.
Yeah, and that's just what it is today. At the end of the day, it's going to be different, of course. And this room can hold about 20 people comfortably, I'd say. We've had up to 35 people in there, and it's not so comfortable. And there's an archway between this room and the study, the library, where we've got dozens and dozens and dozens of books about radical positivity. We try not to be against anything. We find it really alienating to start saying, well, you know, if you say this person's bad or this ideology is bad, people won't come around. So we've got a library of things that are just radically positive, you know, permaculture design and classics and, you know, things to educate the self. And, you know, several chairs to sit in. There's a little kitchen zoig. It's not quite a kitchen, little place to make your stuff come together. Have a cup of tea, make some coffee. We drink a lot of coffee at the Guildhall, it turns out. And you go through this whole series of rooms, and you find yourself in the backyard, going out the back door. And there's four beautiful raised beds that are planted to the point where it's inspired neighbors to give us other raised beds in their front yards.
We've annexed several.
We have annexed.
Consensually annexed garden
right.
beds.
We've been gifted the opportunity to garden other people's beds. There's strawberries again out there, and we've got peas, and we've got beets and peppers and
carrots.
We've got a few permaculture designs in the backyard. We built a gasifier, which would take a long time to explain. So I'll just keep it more aesthetic than that, with the stage right in the middle of all these four beds. And if you mosey back inside the back door, you'll see another door to the basement. And down there, we've got our fabrication lab. We're just putting on our final touches on our 3D printer. We do beer brewing down there, or at least the storage of the beer brewing. We've got this big wraparound deck that goes around half the building. And we usually do our brewing on the porch, but the storage downstairs. And there's all sorts of cubbies and shelves down there for different projects where we invite people to consensually use this shelf for their project, their community project, and house it down there. And hopefully they label it with whose this is, why it's there, and, you know, if there's any problems, get in contact so that they can say, hey, by the way, did you know this is leaking? Or what do I do about that? This has been here too long. Yeah, and then upstairs right now we're operating a bunkhouse, which is just a little way for us to make the rent easier. You know, renting out bunks is a really tangible, easy way to get a little bit of money when you give everything away for free in the gift economy all day. It's hard to make rent. So we invite some transient energy to come through, some travelers and people new to Portland to experience what it's like to be in community with others. And also up there, we've got a little audio-video lab we're putting together. That's not too far along. And we hope to have that done, I'd say, in the next 3 weeks, probably. Yeah. It's going along pretty quickly. Yeah, I just don't want to make any promises that are intangible, although I do that all the time. So that's a survey. It's bluish.
It says community supported everything across the front in large, friendly letters.
Yes, which... it's beautiful. It's the one that says community support everything. We're bracketed between two red buildings. Not that Sam would know that because he's colorblind.
You're listening to Positive Revolting. I'm your host, Sarah Sneath, and I have with me Sam and River, who are talking about community supported everything, a thought experiment based on interdependence, and a guild hall in Northeast Alberta that is practicing this experiment.
I kind of had some questions here about, like, the physical appearance of, as I said earlier, like organized sharing, but it kind of sounds like more this is about maybe a feelings thing and making people feel that they're capable. You can correct me if I'm wrong, at any point in time.
Yes, and I've noticed that when I call my feelings feelings and my thoughts, mm-hmm. I feel empowered. Like, to segregate them, I am feeling this. I am thinking this. It's, like, really helpful. So it's not just feelings. I, as a human being, do have a need for emotional safety. I need to feel safe to be effective, to thrive. And I have thoughts related to that, and I have strategies, and for quite some time.
Ooh, maybe we could talk a little bit, and I think this might answer the question about the... sort of where at this point we feel like we're heading.
That's great.
Mm-hmm. Because like we ended up getting this space right at the end of December. On December 22nd, after the world didn't end on December 21st, we had a beginning of the world waffle brunch, and that was kind of our big public kickoff. And so we've only been there for just over 4 months.
Wow, yeah.
Yeah. The idea and the strategies have changed a lot, and they will probably continue to change because we are very agile and not afraid to change things up.
They've changed in the last week drastically.
And the ideas that we're working with right now is that we would really like to go out into the community. We have so many... One of the really beautiful things that happens is that when you ask people what they really want to be doing with their time, if they, you know, is say money was no object, if you had all of your physical needs met, what would you do with your time? This is what we've been asking people as the sort of a final question of a CSE. And no one yet has said, I want a bigger house and a faster car. Everyone says, I'm really passionate about music. I want to teach kids music, or I want to grow food for my community, or I want to cook food, or I want to, you know, learn how to, you know, do whatever. It's like, I want to build beautiful things. I want to make art. The things that people really want to do are really not that, they're not evil. They're not like, we're not in competition with each other. The things that make us happy are doing the things that we love for other people, overwhelmingly. I'm not going to say that's true for everyone, but I think to some extent it is. People really, really want to give their gifts. And so, as long as it's on their terms. And so, what I would really love to see is we have people who love to brew beer. and love to make bread. I like to make chocolate. River likes to make soap.
And other things.
People really like to do these things. So I would really like to go out into the community and offer people our gifts. And if we can get, for example, 50 people, 50 households, to chip in $60 a month, for example, we could give all of these gifts on a sliding scale and or on a continuing basis, these things that we really love to give.
Sustainable.
Because that is the crux of the gift economy, is that a gift works both ways and money is a resource. So when you work in the gift economy, you have to recognize that sometimes you do have to ask for money. The Guildhall costs money to rent.
These things cost money to produce. And they're way cheaper to produce in community.
Yeah.
Have you heard of, I think it's called, I'm going to have to look into it, but it's basically, it's a monthly publication, but it's not a publication. It's called The Thing or something like that.
What?
And it's, and they contract an artist and they do exactly what you're talking about. They gift, one of the gifts was that Dave Eggers curtain where, you know, it's him writing from the perspective of the curtain to the person in the shower.
Mm.
And it's a monthly subscription and you get the item.
That's really cool.
The item, but maybe that's something to look into.
It's really sort of similar to that. We realize that when we produce things that are basic needs, often when they're marked up, sometimes by state taxes, stamps, in the case of beer, for example, like we can give people a lot of value for less money, and we can charge them less money for the membership to get access to this thing.
While still creating a surplus.
So if we end up with a few dollars from everyone, we can actually, rather than, for the example of beer, be taxed to distribute it, we can just own it together and tax ourselves to put that into a grant to give to the community. So we can then, if we come together as neighbors all on the same block, come together and say, well, what do we want to do with this extra $1,500 this month? $1,500 is a lot of money for our community to do. If they wanted to put in a small basketball court, they could do that. If they wanted to file for, do you know what a street vacation is? Would you like to explain it?
A street vacation is when a group of homeowners come together to legally take back the vehicle right-of-way from the city. It costs $5,000 and takes about 2 years at least to process, requires 100% of all of the neighbors involved and two-thirds of the neighbors within the surrounding radius. So it's a very difficult thing to get.
And
when you get it, you legally own the street. Everyone's property lines are extended out to the middle of the street. And you could close the street, put it into a land trust, turn it into a community garden, and then cover it with a greenhouse in the winter that everyone could have a community kitchen in it and everyone could eat together in the winter even though it's raining. It's climate controlled in the greenhouse.
So,
for example,
By drinking beer intentionally with your neighbors and brewing beer intentionally with the neighbors and marking it up to the price you're buying it at, anyway, you can re-seize the roadway to be your neighborhood common space. And this is just one tactic that you could use with this. And in 4 months of doing this, collecting this $1,500, you could have money to file for this permit and already be eye-to-eye to look at people and go, well, actually, I do trust
you.
Let's
do that.
And actually, your passions are in line with what I'm doing. And you can do really powerful things together. If you wanted a garden instead of a roadway, you could have that. If you wanted a basketball court, you could do that. If you wanted an arbitrary other thing, you could have that.
Another big thing is, like, so the Guildhall has this bunk room upstairs that right now we're using to help lower our rent while we just, you know, keep trying to figure out how we can do this. And that bunk room I would love to see stay, and I would love to have a place where the Guildhall ends up being a place where we invite people to come in and tell us about what they want to do, and we help work those things that they like to do, the things that they want to do, into tangible proposals. And we would have 4 bunk rooms upstairs, and we would offer, say, 3-month fellowships where people could live upstairs as a fellow doing the thing that they have applied to the community to do, that the community has been like, yes, I would love for you to have room and board so that you can spend all of your time doing nothing but that thing that you're really passionate about, because that thing that you're really passionate about is really valuable to me as a community member. I think that's really beautiful. It's like urban woofing. There are lots of people who are really, really just yearning to do work that is meaningful, who can't find jobs in Portland, who really are... would be fine if they just had food and a bed. And a single human who is fed and happy and healthy and passionate is a force of nature. And we could have four of those people who they apply to the community with what they want to do. The community chooses the ones that reflect their values the most. And then those people are in community 24/7, being able to get their needs met and contribute in the way that they want to contribute. It's like being able to write up your own job description for the exact thing you've always wanted to do.
Oh, yeah.
So I think that's what I would really like to shoot for in some capacity, is how do we get people able to do the things, like, nonstop and really dedicate their time to these things that they're passionate about.
It's sort of silly. I realized about a year ago that we can have interns with schools, and we can hire interns, and we don't have to have positions available necessarily. We can have potential interns identify what they want to do and hire them for something they wrote up themselves. So you can get people creating real life opportunities as long as they can liaise with someone who's expert in the field and, you know, some teacher with their school to approve and liaise on that side to pretty much do whatever they want. So we could even have our fellows get school credit, for example, to do whatever they want on their resume, whatever they want to learn about. It's sort of hilarious. We can hire volunteers to do whatever. And that's sort of our model. People come up and they're like, hey, so I like to garden. Do you guys need gardeners? Well, not really. Would you like to garden? Cool. Yeah, go ahead. There's the backyard. Like, it's silly. You can just give people permission all day long.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, I just, we're running a little bit
long.
Out of time. No, not long, I wouldn't say, but just out of time in this space.
Mm-hmm.
Is there something that you'd really like to add? I know one thing that I was thinking a lot of is maybe the definition of radical positivity, since you've mentioned it a lot.
Yeah. So, like I said earlier, radical ideas often get into negativity. And when you talk about negativity, a lot of people have an opinion, and it gets into disagreement real quick. You go into a place like an anarchist info shop bookstore, and you'll see a whole section on police states and drones and the like. And, you know, that cultivates a, like, oh, I'm going to talk angry about this. And when you talk about breaking things down, you're not building anything beautiful. You're destroying. You're putting your energy into something that isn't building new culture. And I'm being radically negative about radical negativity. And I think that if we just talk about what we want to see in the world and take tangible steps to do it, like a direct action can look like planting a garden in your neighbor's backyard, cooking some soup for... Yeah, consensually. It can be cooking soup for the guy you know's hungry down the street. It can be just listening to a neighbor. So radical positivity, what we call the thing, interestingly enough, is just doing what you know is right and what you think is beautiful, not against anything, just because you know it's beautiful. I don't think you can try to dominate domination culture without reinventing domination culture. And if we just do what we know is right, what we know is the thing, we're going to find some more traction. And I can't define it. I can't define it. Because it's not mine to define. That's for you to define for yourself. That's for Sam to define for himself. That's for you, listener, to define for yourself. And, you know, if McDonald's wants to say, yeah, this is the thing, you can see right through that and go, I see what you did there. That's not the thing, McDonald's. And I can also not have the same thing as Sam or you listener. And it's okay because we all have our, you know, personal ability to be like, yeah, here's the beautiful thing I'm doing. And I'm not against your beautiful thing. I'm just growing gardens. Good luck with your circuit building.
And so a really tangible example of what that looks like is every other Tuesday night we've been collaborating with Joe from The Melting Pot, and he plays music, and we've gotten a group together who flash mob a different public park, and everyone has their own headphones and FM radios, so everyone's listening to the same music really loud, and it's totally silent if you're not wearing headphones. Last night we did it in Director Park, and it was a huge hit. There was probably about 30 people there, and 30 to 40. But lots of people walking by who just like were really, there were people who were really excited just that it was happening because it was silly and positive and ridiculous. And for the most part, these things are, they're out in public parks. We're all private citizens happening to listen to the radio together. We're doing it during open hours in a park. We're not breaking any sound violations. It's something I call militantly considerate. It's like we recognize, like, no, we're not going to not have a party. But we also recognize that you might not want to listen to our music. So we will invite you into our party.
Headphones are over there if you
need headphones are over there. We brought extras. Please join us if you want to. And another thing that started happening out of Community Support Everything is we started doing a thing called the Cupcake Train. A member of our community named Puck was really excited about making cupcakes and making hundreds of cupcakes and giving them away for free on the Max. So now periodically we make hundreds of cupcakes and give them away for free.
Thank you, Puck.
And now it's looking like those two things are going to merge, and we're going to have mobile dance parties that rove through the streets handing out free food. That to me is, that is my version of radical positivity. I think that dancing together and sharing food together are the essence of a peaceful human culture. Mm-hmm. When, like, can we at least agree that dancing and giving each other food is something that we can all be doing? Do you all agree that that is in your version of the thing? Creating things that are beautiful, that aren't against something, but for something really basic. And that, to me, I think has a lot of power. Because when you talk to a lot of people about their political beliefs, it ends up being they have taken a side, which is a strategy, mm-hmm. to get their needs met.
And to get the positive
thing. If you ask them why they believe in this or that, it's like, because I care about my children. I want a better life. I want good food. I want to, like time to spend with my family. Like, it's really, there are so many overlapping things that people really do have in common, and if we can agree that we all want those things, I don't want to argue over our strategies.
And I'm thinking about, like, the Occupy. I was down at the Portland Occupy for the entire duration. I think I left to take two showers. And it was sort of a struggle to watch all these people coming together to be against something. Everyone wanted to be heard about their different strategy, how to get something done, how to whatever, whatever, whatever. Like, it was every time there was a tangible thing on the table to talk about at the GAs, it seemed like someone wanted to go to beyond stack to talk about, well, let me tell you about my family and what happened. Well, we're talking about what we want to, but I need to be heard. And no, I disagree. And it's really tough to get people in the same room to dissent and to be against something. And out of the Occupy came tons of beautiful different groups that then came off of the Occupy. I could list their names, but that doesn't seem to be what I'm wanting to do. And they're really powerful, and they're focused, and they have tangible things. And ours just so happens to be radical positivity. And I'm not saying being against something is wrong or bad. I think that standing up and standing in solidarity and saying no against things that you think are wrong is a valid strategy, where the Guildhall just practices positivity. And if you want to be negative, there's many other venues out there.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for coming to talk to me.
Thanks.
I learned a lot.
I like your haircut. It's wonderful.
Oh, thanks.
You've been listening to Positively Revolting. I'm Sarah Sneath, filling in for your regular hosts, Ani and Lynn. Today I spoke with Sam and River of Community Supported Everything, an idea, a thought experiment, if you will, based on interdependence. If you would like to learn more about Community Supported Everything, you can find it listed on Facebook as such, or you could go to communitysupportedeverything.org. If you missed the earlier part of the show, you can find the entire episode on kboo.fm. Like Positively Revolting on Facebook or follow it on Twitter at Positive Revolt. Thanks again to my guests today, Sam and River.
It's a cruel, cruel world to feast on your own. A heavy cross to carry alone. The lights are on, but everyone's gone, and it's cruel. It's a funny way to make ends meet.
You are tuned to KBOO Portland, where the time is approximately 9 o'clock of the a.m. Stay tuned for APA Compass.
You're listening to APA Compass, the Pacific Northwest's only Asian Pacific American public affairs radio program. I'm Kushlani D'Souza. Today, APA Compass contributor Luann Algoso speaks with comedian Jenny Yang, co-founder of the first ever all-female Asian American stand-up comedy tour, Disoriented Comedy. We'll also hear Andrew Ye's interviews with award-winning children's author Selena Yoon and with Anne Wetherill, curator of Flying Tigers, Chinese-American Aviators in Oregon. Also coming up this morning, my conversation with Catherine Chung, whose debut novel, Forgotten Country, was recognized earlier this year as one of five novels honored at the 2013 Penn Hemingway Literary Awards. First, APA Compass youth contributor and Grant High School student Sarah Onitsuka with an angry APA minute on planned cuts to Grant's Japanese program next year.
My name is Sarah Onitsuka. I'm a junior at Grant High School and a member of Grant's Japanese program. Due to increasing budget cuts, this amazing program is in danger. This is my APA call to action. There are two parts to the Japanese program at Grant. The first is the Japanese Magnet Program, or JMP for short, which is a Japanese immersion program from kindergarten to 12th grade. Typically, students in JMP start at Richmond Elementary, continue to Mount Tabor Middle School, and end at Grant High School. The other part of the Japanese program at Grant is the neighborhood Japanese 1 through 4 classes, which are open to anyone who is interested in the language. I've been a part of the immersion program since 6th grade, and because I've been in it for so long, I never imagined that it could suddenly be in jeopardy. However, this past week, our school proposed to cut the entire high school program from neighborhood to immersion classes. Though the immersion classes were saved, the neighborhood Japanese 1 through 4 classes are still at risk. Through this ordeal, we have really been uniting as a community to make our voices heard. Immersion has been saved, but it's time to rise up and support the other half that makes the whole, the neighborhood Japanese program. I was absolutely amazed at how fast the news spread and how many people this cut will affect. Of course, those of us in the program at Grant were shocked and upset, but it stunned many other groups of people. Parents with children in the program have been tirelessly sending emails and letters to PPS, expressing how much it means to them. Alumni, having heard the news, were upset too, despite the fact that they already graduated a few years back. In fact, many of these alumni are still studying Japanese to this day, which proves that the program's influence does not end in high school. But the most surprising group to support us, I think, is our fellow students at Grant. Many people who aren't even taking Japanese have been coming up to me and expressing their disbelief, saying that it's a big part of the Grant High School community. We've also been getting major support online. When we created a Facebook page, we received more than 100 likes in the first few hours. In addition, the petition going around Grant High School collected more than 400 signatures, and the online one had signatures from all around the United States, and even a few from Japan. I didn't think that anyone outside of the Japanese program would care so much, so it was wonderful to hear. The fact that so many people support us has been astonishing and incredibly encouraging. Although a lot of us complain about Japanese homework or tests, we honestly do care. Sometimes we forget the value of our own program, but it's times like these when we realize how much of an impact it has had on our lives. Japanese is a really interesting language, since it's so different from any romantic language such as English, French, Spanish, or Latin, which are the other languages offered at Grant High School. Besides knowledge of the language, the Japanese program has given us a vastly different perspective of the world and influenced the way we think about our own American culture. Not to mention, the two high school teachers, Paige Sensei and Lupfer Sensei, are the most dedicated teachers I've met. They stay at school until 6 p.m. every day, when every other teacher has already locked their rooms and headed home. They take pride in the entire program and how far it's come. It seems like a lot of work for just the two of them to take on. Really, if Grant had the money,